To me, it's about mission-based leadership. I'm looking for people who recognize what the bigger mission is, but at the same time, understand their role in carrying it out. And this is part of the unteachables when you're hiring. When you find people who can A, understand the bigger picture we're trying to go towards, and also recognize the role in it, they can see, because you're never going to be able to chart out what are all the handshakes and handoffs and interdepartmental interplays required in a project.
You're listening to The Stand-Up from Monday.com, where we talk to real leaders every episode to get their sharpest insights.
I'm so pleased to have Russell Sherwin here on the show today. Thanks so much for joining us today, Russell.
Oh, I can't wait to be spending time with you, Elle. It's awesome to see you again.
Good to see you, too. So Russell is a facilitator at Force Management. He is a partner and investor at B2B Trax. He was the CRO at FRX, the CMO at IBM Watson Commerce. Really, really storied and amazing history. So excited to dig in with you today about all sorts of different types of topics. So Russell, let's start with, something quick. You have built a lot of really high performing teams in the past. What are the lessons that you've learned as you've navigated different kinds of company challenges or complexity? What are some things that you took away that makes up high performing teams?
A lot of folks who will look at it and say it's about the people. You got to have great people. There's a lot of people that are focused on the content, the dynamic of the product market. There's people who are focused on the process. And what I have found in building high performance teams, it's about understanding the outcomes that an operation require and blending the following. I'll give you an example of how you blend it all together. Let's just talk, go to market has been what I've been focused on for the past 15, 20 years. Go-to-market, the outcomes tend to be about profitable revenue and making sure that you can go after a product market and harness and harvest the revenue opportunity there. The way to build a high-performing team there, or any team, is understand the outcomes. From there, you need to understand, well, systemically, what is the process it takes to harvest those outcomes? And so in the world of go-to-market, you build a typical funnel, which you have top of the funnel, make buyers aware. From there, it's have a value hypothesis, prove out the value hypothesis, capture the value through a negotiation, harness the value, and renew. Well, within each of those stages, from there, it's, well, what activities happen to drive the outcomes or the sub-outcomes or the milestones needed in each stage of the revenue harvesting process? Once you have the activities, then you could dive deeper and say, well, what skills are needed to carry out the activities effectively and efficiently that are going to drive the milestones that are going to systemically and globally at scale achieve those outcomes? And here's where it gets interesting. So we now have a set of skills required to carry out activities that are following the milestones within a process. Once you have those skills, you can break it out into roles on one hand. And then in addition to roles, you could break it out into which of the skills are teachable and which of the skills are not teachable. Now we're getting really pragmatic, because once we know the skills that are not teachable, we start building a hiring plan and an interview plan. And that's where we're looking for culture, which is what I think Monday.com does so well. For instance, a no asshole policy is probably going to trump somebody who is really good at Smartsheet, let's say. I'd rather have a no asshole than somebody that knows the competitive dynamics, because Monday.com can teach the skills and how to differentiate the Monday.com product. So once you know the teachable skills from the non-teachable skills, all of a sudden you can have a very focused plan on what employee enablement looks like and employee hiring and development looks like. And so where a lot of people miss, a lot of people just love to carry out processes, or a lot of people are the touchy-feely type, which is, we're going to hire great people. Well, what we need to do is systemically understand the outcomes, have a very clear and tight process that has very clear gates and clear milestones. And then finally, an employee development plan, which understands what are the type of people we're bringing on to create the culture we care about. The main point I wanted to convey is that it's not about the people. It's not about the process. It's not about the systems. It's about bringing them all together, keeping in mind what the end outcome has to be, and making sure there's absolute clarity for each individual as to what their role in the process is and what their handoffs and their interplay is between the different roles that are involved in the operation. Of course, it takes a leader who could look at the big picture and adapt to circumstance as things change or things don't work.
I love this idea of it's not about the people, it's about the outcome. And not in a callous way, in more of a way like we have a goal if our goal isn't achieved, then we're not doing our people a service either. When you start to build out those outcomes, a lot of times as leaders, we're given something. Sometimes it's very easy, but what happens when things are squishy, when there's a lot of squishy outcomes associated? Part of what you discuss, the interplay between departments, things like that. How do you think about those skills when the outcome is more squishy?
There's outcomes and then there's missions. So when we're hiring, we're looking for people who are passionate about the mission and bought in, but also great leaders who can adapt. Because at the end of the day, when it's squishy, like clearly revenue is an outcome, but let's say a mission, like your buddy Pierre likes to say, I think his exact words are, we're going to make a great experience and make each knowledge worker the best version of themselves. But in that hiring process, the things that are unteachable are, is there passion for the mission? And frankly, is there an understanding of the mission? I think, honestly, that's where leadership comes in. When you can't look at the scorecard and, you know, say black or white, are they doing it? We need people that, A, understand the mission, which is the non-teachables, and then people who have leadership, have demonstrated leadership abilities to manage their ambiguity. That's my perspective, though. What are your thoughts? Because it really is a great topic of how do you lead people towards an ambiguous end?
I think that part of what you just discussed is, one, finding the passion, two, thinking about the skills of people who know how to motivate teams and operate in ambiguity. So people who have done this before, where they have kind of an ambiguous vision. But something else that you mentioned that I think is actually super underrated when we're talking about building teams is the interplay between departments and how people work with their stakeholders. What does that handoff look like? And that's something that, for instance, now that I'm thinking about it, I think we deprioritize that in a lot of our hiring processes. Or we think about that when we look at, you know, different teams. We don't think, will this person play nice with sales? Or will this product person play nice with design? And it's even beyond playing nice, it's will they be able to effectively achieve a goal together? I'd love to hear about an example that you had in your work that really exemplified it, because it sounded like you had something specific in your mind when you were talking about it.
I do have a kind of a weird background where I'm a programmer who realized, well, I'm more interested in the socioeconomic impact of technology than building technology. I'm a marketer who said, why the heck can't the sales team carry my message? And I realized, wow, I don't know the answer to that question. Let me go learn. To me, it's about mission-based leadership. I'm looking for people who recognize what the bigger mission is, but at the same time, understand their role in carrying it out. And this is part of the unteachables when you're hiring. When you find people who can, A, understand the bigger picture we're trying to go towards, and also recognize that the role in it, they can see, because you're never going to be able to chart out what are all the handshakes and handoffs and interdepartmental interplays required in a project. If I have the mentality and I'm going to put the mission over my specific role, yet still understand that I do have a job to carry my role, I'm going to be more flexible and I'm not going to sit there and create silos and say, well, I own engineering and you own marketing, so stay in your own lane. Instead, I'm going to be more collaborative because my underlying motivation is let's collectively and collaboratively achieve the mission. So that's a long-winded way of saying the importance of everybody knowing their role, but at the same time, understanding the role exists within the context of a broader mission and knowing that no plan is going to be perfect.
I'd love to hear like about a time where, you know, I talked about what you've seen work, which is this mission-based leadership and kind of thinking about how do we motivate the teams and what kind of skills you're looking for in your people, which are the unteachable and the teachable. But what things have you seen not work well for leaders? Like where have you, what kind of leadership styles have you seen just not work over and over again in your experience in different organizations?
The types of behaviors I've seen are people who are unconsciously competent at something in an individual contributor role and just telling the team what to do without being able to prescriptively break down what you're asking them to do into a specific series of steps. That's one clear behavior, which is a leader will take for granted that people just know how to do what they're expected to do. And because they know how to do it, they expect others can do it.
I'd love to transition to a section of the show that we call, you know, how I failed. Love to hear a little bit about something that you failed at.
Oh, wow. So many things. Back around 2019, 2020, clearly COVID was there. We were in work from home mode at this point in time. And I just, you know, at this time I was CRO for FPX and there was just a lot of stress, like an incredible amount of stress. And I manage it really poorly to the point where It impacted my work performance, but even worse, it impacted my home performance. My wife and I always agreed that family is number one and is above and beyond every one of our goals. Basically, I spent that year, rather than acknowledging the blessing of having our two kids home at an impressionable age, I spent the year A, stressed out in the basement, and B, upstairs losing sleep. I could have done better for my team through ambiguous circumstances. I don't think I did a horrible job, but I think what I did really a bad job of is I lost all sense of balance, letting the stress of the scenario get the better of my outlook. As a result of that, after we did luckily have an exit from FPX, I recognized there are certain skills I wanted to get better at. And so I've learned to teach some of those skills. And then more importantly, I needed to be a better dad and learn better work-life balance. I've had more fun working over the past 4 years and focusing on the type of work I love doing with the type of companies I love working with. But really what I've been working on these past 3 to 4 years are rounding out my leadership skill set professionally, observing many, many leadership teams and seeing what leadership teams do well and leadership teams do poorly. But really, it's been focusing on being present for my kids at a time in their lives when I can still have that impact and impression.
I think that's a really powerful story. And it's something that we don't actually hear a lot from dads, you know, and I think that it's something that all working parents are facing, whether you're a mom or your dad. And what helped you? If you're talking to like a dad just starting off in a new, big, powerful role that's balancing that, what helped you in that case?
A couple thoughts. Number one, if there are guys out there listening to this, we don't talk about this. You know, there's no movement on LinkedIn where we talk about working dads all that much. But when I talk to friends one-on-one, I think we're all thinking it. Most great leaders I know in the professional workspace are probably great leaders at home. And all of those I know, they feel the burn when they're on the road or when they're carrying out their quote unquote masculine responsibilities of being the breadwinner. I guess the guidance there is, I think about one of my good buddies, Jeff Wallenuts, who is like me, he's a revenue leader in the ad tech space. Jeff finally said, enough, I'm taking some time to focus on my two middle-aged kids. I think about my boss, Joe Aliardi, who is one of the best leaders I've ever worked for. Joe's always good in just saying, hey, man, I love you. And it's not because I love you that I'm telling you to get your balance better, but it's because I want you here for the long haul. Like, I don't want you to burn out. And so I guess my guidance to guys in my shoes is find other guys you could chat with about it, because most of us are feeling the same. Anyone who's a great leader at work means they care about their people. You can't authentically care about your people and not care about your kids or your family should you have it. And so I would just say find the peer groups where you can chat with and realize that you're not alone in those emotions, even though it's sociologically wrong to perhaps have those emotions. They're real. They exist. We all have them. And if it makes you feel any better, you can't be an authentic leader if you're not taking care of your family and what's happening at home. And I guess what I'll say also is if you can be a maniacal overworker for only so long until it catches up with you. I mean, I got to a good place because I care deeply about the outcomes and the missions I'm attached to. Know your priorities, know your loyalties, and it's your family first. And then you got to balance that with the missions you choose to subscribe to.
Powerful statement. And also, I think just a reminder to us as leaders that asking your people, checking in on their boundaries, checking in on how they're doing, and then finding your people in general, in terms of just people that you can talk to and create that community around. Because we always hear about working moms, and I don't think enough is said about working dads in general. I would love to go into a professional fire round, like really short answers. What's your best one sentence piece of advice?
Find your passion. Follow your passion with the caveat that there must be outputs, specifically money, from that passion that will satisfy your standard of living requirements. But put your passion first.
Amazing. What's one thing that everyone gets wrong about being an executive?
People don't realize that, A, executives are humans as well. And we see the budget, we see the prestige, we see the platform and the stage. But what we don't realize is the level of pressure we're under. What really is not seen is the higher up you go in an organization, the more trade-offs you have to make. And so most companies I've worked with, the leadership team, the levels of integrity is so high. But what people miss are the trade-offs that we're making, which make people think that the leadership is flawed. It's the amount of decision-making and trade-offs. It's incredible. And so what people miss is the high levels of integrity most corporate officers have. And that's just because it's just easy to throw rocks from the bleachers.
So Russell, thanks so much for joining us today. If our listeners want to hear more about you or learn more about you, where can they go?
Oh gosh, come to my website. ChatGPT and I are in the process of building it right now. It's www.b2btracks.com. It's a bit of a passion project as I'm debating whether I turn my hobby into a business. Yeah, www.b2btracks.com. What I'd say about it is I haven't written a line of code in about 25 years, yet I'm learning Next.js and all sorts of things using this thing called Cursor that's teaching me how to program and frankly doing it for me. So anyways, for the shorter answer, come to b2btracks.com.
It was so much fun to catch up with Russell today, and three lessons really stood out to me. The first is this idea that it's not about the people, it's about the outcome. And really thinking, what is the outcome that my team is trying to achieve? Then backing into the process and the skills that are needed, and then figuring out how to staff that team. The second thing that really stood out to me was this mission clarity. Thinking about how do I make sure my mission is very, very clear to all of my team members, that everyone understands what their lanes are, when to let go of their egos, and how to make sure that they're escalating things when things need to be escalated. And the third thing, talking about the struggles about being a working dad, it's not something that we talk about enough. And the ideas about setting boundaries and finding a like-minded community of other dads really stood out to me as universal for any working parent. It was great catching up with Russell, and I'm excited to implement many of these lessons with my team tomorrow.
Our next stand-up is in 2 weeks. Before you go, if you found this episode thought-provoking, consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about our conversation or more takeaways to help with all the leadership roles you play, visit monday.com or sign up for our newsletter. Links are in the show notes. We'll see you at our next stand-up.